Hello, investors, and welcome to the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Myard, and I'm delighted to have my friend Henry Washington here hosting with me today. But Henry, let me ask you, what's the biggest investing mistake you ever made?
Oh gosh, man, the biggest investing mistake I made was early on in my career, I bought an 8-unit building, and I severely under-budgeted my renovation. I ran out of that renovation money before we even got inside of the building to do any interior renovations. And fortunately for me, the market picked up so much that I had a big equity bump that I then had the leverage to finish the renovation. But boy, oh boy, was that scary.
Oh, I bet. And well, thank you for sharing that, because I do think it is uncommon for real estate investors, especially in this age of social media, to talk about some of the mistakes that they made or things that went wrong in their career. But today we're talking to Kevin and Aisha Shelton, and we're going to dive right into a really massive financial hole that they found themselves in and talk about how they worked their way out of it.
Yes, I think one of the best parts about this story is not that they took the loss, but how they took the loss and turned it into a profitable business that is serving their community.
And this is going to be a particularly fun and interesting conversation because, as we've said, we talk about a big financial loss. And I think that's possibly one of the most relatable parts of being a real estate investor is just the fear of taking a huge loss. And if it does happen to you, how to bounce back. We also talk about pivoting from one strategy of flipping into a less common strategy of new construction and how that can actually be less risky and more profitable than flipping. And we also talk about how to develop a neighborhood and to build wealth while still keeping your community in mind.
All right. And with that, let's jump in with Kevin and Aisha.
All right. So Kevin and Aisha, you've been investing for 7 years, as I understand it. And early on, one of the strategies you used was flipping. And I'm going to put you on the spot right away and just jump right into it. I heard you lost 300 grand. Can you tell us about that?
Who told you this? Who told you that?
I get this little sheet that tells me everything I need to know about you. And that stood out to me, and I got to jump right into that one.
Yeah. So I like to call it the best lesson, the best L we ever took. Most people call it L a loss, and I like to call it a lesson. It's made us much better business owners and much stronger business owners too. But I feel like we're a married couple, right? And in any relationship with a couple, there's one person who is the creative and one person who's the technical one. And so Kevin here, he does all the creative things and makes beautiful homes. And I'm blessed to be able to sell those beautiful homes. But when we were renovating, Kevin made a very beautiful and efficient home. But the area of town that we were renovating in, the people who did renovations in those communities didn't really put very much into it. We also care very much about the client, the end buyer of the products that we build. And so if windows needed to be double paned or the foundation needed to be repaired, we did that. And even when we would get a contract for full price, appraisal would come in below market value. And that happened to the tune of $300,000 on several flips that we had.
So she always tells the story much differently than I do. So this was spread across about 4 flips, and literally we had full price offers, sold houses, and these were FHA buyers. So the appraisal sticks with the property. So when we got those low appraisals, and I'm talking about $220,000 contracts on $160,000 appraisals, mm-hmm. right? And those stick for 90 days. And we were, you know, whether it's using hard money and private investment at the time, so we couldn't afford to keep them. Looking back now, you know, time is a great teacher. But all of those properties, we could have kept them all. And I mean, literally been in a great spot today. So time is definitely the friend of those who wait. But for us at the moment, we had to do everything that we could to just balance our business. It started off with really auditing our business and seeing that, you know, these deals weren't profitable. And we had a couple of new constructions at the time that we were starting, but these flips were kind of our bread and butter. We ended up having to liquidate our portfolio. We had 32 properties. to cash out all of our private investors. And honestly, it was one of the, like Aisha said, the worst, best times. Best times now, but worst times then. We were pregnant. We had just went full time in our business. It was
a disaster.
Storm. It was a perfect storm. Truly.
I'm not laughing at you. It just sounds like a comedy of errors almost, like, you know.
And it was. And we had to work through it. It's funny. At the time, Aisha was like, we're going bankrupt. We talked to two different bankruptcy attorneys. And they all told us, that you have the skills and assets to build out of this. You are not bankrupt. You have to keep going. Thankfully, one of our private investors actually rode the ride with us for an additional 2 years so that we didn't have to sell off our prized rentals, which was her first home and my childhood home and a lot of the properties that we just hold really near and dear to our heart. And we wrote a $140,000 check 2.5 years later. And he actually came down from Austin and we had dinner and he was like, I am so proud of you guys for riding through this and how you showed up. And we made sure everybody was whole and everybody was good and we kept going.
Unbelievable story. And I really do. I promise we're going to let you guys tell the cool story of how you bounce back for this, because I think that's what everyone wants to hear. But I also think it's super important to help everyone learn from what you said, Aisha, is one of the most important lessons that you've ever learned. So I just want to ask a couple clarifying questions about what happened when you lost this money. What year was this?
This was 2019.
Okay. And so you had been investing, it sounds like you've been investing for a couple of years, you just quit and you were your full-time jobs. And so you were scaling up. And so you had a bunch of these projects going at one time. Is that right?
Yes. That's one of the reasons why we were scaling is the company had gotten big enough where we had a team, but I was traveling for work building across the country. So I'd be on a plane 4 days a week building in California and we'd have a team here that wasn't very experienced. So managing it was very hard to do.
And I think, you know, when is the right time to, and we get this question all the time because of what we do now, when is the right time to like quit your job? Because everybody wants to quit their job and go into real estate. I think what we imagined it would be is that we said, you know, when the amount of projects that we had would exceed, you know, our salaries, and it just kind of made sense if we didn't transition over to full time into the business, then we would lose out on opportunity and money. That was kind of like our, okay, let's jump in kind of signal. If we could do it over again, we always say that we would do it different. And when we talk to other couples that are in the same place that we were, like, hey, we want to quit our jobs and go into real estate, we're like, okay, wait, hold on. Like, stop.
But see, the one thing about it is I don't know now. And I know we've always said that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd do it different now because the lessons that in the tenacity that we need now and scaling our business up even more.
Yeah.
Without those challenges, I could not take the level of work and stress in our business now is 10x.
Yeah. What do the entrepreneurs say? Like, what's the best way to like start your business? It's like fail fast.
Yeah.
So that you can, you know, learn the lessons and keep going.
So we just heard about how Aisha and Kevin took a huge $300,000 loss and handled it with incredible grace. But if you're like me, you're probably wondering how they managed to bounce back. We'll hear about that right after the break.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent to Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent to Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent to Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. We know, and you all know, why it's super important that good tenant screening is absolutely critical to your management process. Luckily, Rent Ready, the comprehensive property management software, has a new feature that makes tenant screening a breeze. In addition to TransUnion certified tenant screening, Rent Ready now offers proof of income verification. Rent Ready's automatic tenant proof of income verification ensures an in-depth check of each applicant's financial stability. With Plaid certified tenant income and assets reports, you can see a potential tenant's income summary and total earnings by month. All tenant screening and verification is paid by the tenant and done through the desktop and mobile app. It's time to say goodbye to gut check tenant screening and feel confident renting out your property with Rent Ready. And as a matter of fact, all BiggerPockets pros have Rent Ready included in your pro membership. If you're not a pro, Rent Ready is offering you 50% off of their annual plan. New customers visit rentready.com and use code BP2024. That's RENTREDI.com using code BP2024. That's BP, like Bigger Pockets, in the year 2024 to save 50% off of 1 year of Rent Ready. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the fountain of youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
Welcome back to the Bigger Pockets podcast. We are here with Aisha and Kevin. Let's get into it. Yeah, this is a truly inspiring story for people. And there's a few things that you said that I think are really, really important for people to understand. It sounds like there were at least two different sounding boards that you went to seek advice about this current business situation. And if you have the wrong mentors or the wrong sounding boards in your life and in your business, it could have led you down a totally different path, right? But your sounding boards were able to properly advise you, to pick you up and show you and tell you that, hey, these are things we've seen before. You've got the skills and the assets to recover, and you just need to go figure out how to do that. And having the wrong people, a lot of the times, right, a lot of investors will only have their, you know, their family or some friends they grew up with who they can talk to about these things. But if they've never been through something like this, it sounds devastating. And I'm not saying it wasn't devastating. All the while, what Dave didn't mention is you also had a baby on the way too. That's terrifying, right? But at the end of the day, what's cool about real estate, especially single family and small multifamily real estate, is that you're right. Time will become your friend. If you can figure out a way to hold on, sell whatever you need to sell, hold on to the rest, at some point, those become good deals. Nobody's dying out here, right? You're going to be okay. You just have to figure out how to weather the storm. And I think you guys showed excellent both poise and strength as a couple, and savvy in terms of having the right people around you. I think that's just what people need to hear, is you gotta get the right people around you, because you're going to deal with something you've never had to deal with before. And it sure helps to have somebody in your corner who either has dealt with it or knows who to talk to.
Yeah, totally. I remember when we talked to mentors and people that are just light years ahead of us, mm-hmm. when we were going through it, and they go, this, and they'd say the same thing. Oh yeah, wait, no, you're in the right place. And we're like, no, you don't understand.
They said all burnt down. Great
spot. You're in a great place, and we're like, well, how am I going to pay my mortgage? Because I'm not. You're in the right place. This is a really good place.
And they would laugh. They'd laugh just like you laughed right there. They'd say, "Oh man, you're in such a great place." Yeah. And I said, What are you talking about?
But now that we've made it to the other side of that, we understand and also say that to the same people like, oh, yeah, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Look, in this phase of your business.
It was a great place.
It was.
Now.
But don't you wish you learned the lesson for like 30 grand instead of 300 grand?
I'll say this, and it's funny. I'm a student of history, and I also study success. And one of the things that I look at is your ability to handle stress and pressure and your essentially trajectory. So when I look at people, and we just had a meeting with a very large home builder, national home builder, and I'm telling them about our business, and literally I'm like, yeah, you know, we have about $1 million in debt. We need to figure out this. He said, we have $800 million in debt.
Oh my God.
Levels. There's levels to this game.
So, you know, for the $30,000 loss, I get it. And we've taken those. I remember our very first loss was $5,000. And at the time, we couldn't afford to take it. And Aisha was like, do not lose this $5,000. And we definitely lost the $5,000. That does not feel that bad.
Well, it's almost like, you know, to really put you in this like zero base, like we're going to start from scratch. We need to really rethink everything. Sometimes you kind of have to feel a maximum amount of pain. Like if if you're going to take a $5,000 loss and you can afford that, it might not teach you anything, you know, because, you know, it stinks. No one wants to lose $5,000. But if you're super successful and it's not really going to change your day to day situation, it won't hurt. But you guys went through maximum struggle, it sounds like. And it sounds like it really just made you rethink the entire process, your entire goals and everything.
We still recover from that today. And it's only the relationships that help us now. It's having these conversations, talking to banks, talking to investors, and telling them our story. And honestly, that has been, even in the darkest times of our business, it's been us having those transparent conversations with people saying, this is what happened. This is how we responded. And here's what we did after the fact that bridged those gaps in our business.
Yep.
So to recap for the listeners, it sounds like what you were able to do was go back through your existing portfolio. And because you had bought some properties and had some equity in some, you were able to sell off some or all of your portfolio to cover your debts. Is that what we're hearing?
That is correct.
Well, you know, I'll say that that's in majority. That saved the private investors. We still took a brunt to our credit and to our personal savings. So our life savings was also in the business, and that was also lost. So for us, our protection, our goal was to protect the people and take the burden of that on ourselves because we knew we could recover from that.
And it's integrity, right? Like the easiest thing would have been to say to our investors like, oh, this didn't work out the way that we thought it would and keep it moving. But the one thing that Kevin and I were very clear on with each other in our business is that we wanted to have integrity. And your word is your bond, especially when it comes to investors. And so we literally were ready to put up the first home I bought, like
our personal home
in order to make these investors whole. Luckily, we had what we like to call friendlies that were like, I can't let you guys do that. Like, I know that you will build your way out of it. And we did. We stayed in close communication with everyone. Every time we closed on a home, we gave some money until everybody was paid out. And that very last payout was like a celebration. It was $140,000. And honestly, he put $100,000 with us. 2.5 years later, he walked away with with $40,000. Yeah. So I don't think that's a bad investment at all.
And here's the crazy part.
Still beat the stock market.
I'd make that investment.
The craziest part about it is we were still actively building at the time. And this is our livelihood. So we had to raise more money in the midst of taking this loss to finish the projects that we had under construction. And it was private investors that were like, look, we just took this loss. Here's what we did. We still need some money to finish this stuff and then keep going forward. But we had to do all of that at the same time.
Yep.
And that's an important point, because what I'm hearing from you guys is you did everything the right way when it comes to someone who's borrowing funds, especially borrowing private funds. You always have to make your investors whole. A. B. You always have to be completely transparent. If your investors are investing with you, they understand that this wasn't going to be a risk-free investment, right? And so I think where a lot of people get in trouble is they start hiding facts or trying to cover things up, make things look better than it is. And then now not only do they lose their business, but they lose the relationships that come along with that business. And we all know that the relationships are arguably the most important part of a business. And being honest and transparent about what's happening, about what your plan is, and about, and then giving a little bit every time you started to sell something off, it's building trust. And what you did, it sounds like, is you maintain those relationships. And when you think about still being in projects where you're needing to raise money and now having a business where you're probably continuing to raise money, your investors are probably more comfortable with you now than they were before you had the problems, because they know these guys ran dead into a brick wall. They bounced off and they pushed through and they kept going and they made sure everybody got paid even when they were going through it. Like, if I'm going to lend money, you're the kind of people I would want to lend money to. And so I appreciate you coming on this show and being so vulnerable with this story, because this is honestly every real estate investor's, every new investor's worst nightmare. This is the thing they're all so scared about when they're commenting on posts and looking on the Bigger Pockets forums. And you're here showing them exactly how to execute through something like this. So thank you for doing that.
No, thank you.
One more quick break, but stick around because we're going to find out how Aisha and Kevin are building new construction and doing it very cost effectively.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. All of us wish we had more time in the day, but if time was unlimited, what would you spend it doing? Having trouble? Therapy can help. With therapy, you can find what matters most to you and do more of it. Therapy can help you discover what you really want out of life and what your true priorities are. It's more than just talking about trauma or tough times. It can help empower you to accomplish more with less stress and more clarity. The best place to try therapy? BetterHelp. BetterHelp is entirely online. That means it fits your schedule and flexibility, and you don't have to drive through traffic to see your therapist. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/BP today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BP. You've heard us talk about it before. High interest rates are crushing real estate investors, leaving even some of the best investors in need of funding now. But with today's liquidity crisis, who can fill the demand? With Fundrise, America's largest direct-to-investor alternative asset manager, you have the opportunity to. Fundrise's new opportunistic private credit strategy was designed specifically for this new market environment. Fundrise supplies high-demand bridge financing on high-quality assets with credit-worthy borrowers. Top real estate investors get the funding they need while you walk away getting paid a healthy interest rate. To date, Fundrise has completed more than $500 million worth of private credit deals with an average net interest of 10.8%, and they've already amassed a pipeline worth more than $300 million. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can take advantage of this unique window of opportunity while it lasts with Fundrise's new private credit strategy. Ready to start? Go to fundrise.com/pockets to learn more. That's fundrise.com/pockets. This is a paid endorsement for Fundrise. Past performance is not indicative of future results. All investments can lead to loss. Whenever I used to travel, I would get that creeping feeling that I locked my back door. How do I know my property is going to be safe while I'm away? But not anymore, thanks to SimpliSafe Home Security. I'm about to go on a 3-week trip to Copenhagen, but am I tripping about my trip? Nope. With award-winning security and peace of mind from SimpliSafe, I don't need to worry. SimpliSafe is a super amazing alarm system that I actually installed in my house myself personally in less than 30 minutes. And there's so much peace of mind knowing that there's something in place to protect my homes, my goods, and my John Mayer shrine. SimpliSafe systems have high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods, indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch night and day, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day. Plus, SimpliSafe professional monitoring agents can even help stop crime in real time by speaking to intruders through the wireless indoor camera. Hey, bud, get out of here. It's like that, but it's a lot better, I imagine. And if you buy the system and you don't love it, you can get a full refund with SimpliSafe's 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. Right now, get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. You might think you want real estate, But that's not true. What you really want is passive income. With new investors struggling to find deals or get enough money to buy them and veteran landlords tired of the constant tenant phone calls, is there a better alternative? Actually, there is. Short notes from ConnectInvest. ConnectInvest is an online investing platform that allows you to easily participate in passive real estate investing, and all you need is $500 to start. Short notes collectively funds a diversified portfolio of commercial and residential real estate projects across acquisition, construction, and development phases. You'll earn a fixed monthly income without the hassle of owning or managing real estate. Head to connectinvest.com/BP to create your account. Fund your digital wallet with at least $500. Select from 6, 12, and 24-month short notes with annualized return rates up to 9%. Then sit back and let your monthly returns roll in. Join today by visiting connectinvest.com/VP. connectinvest.com/VP.
And we're back with Aisha and Kevin Shelton, and we're about to hear about how they rebuilt their business using new construction. So let's turn to the fun part. Well, this is fun too, but let's hear about what specifically you all did to change your business. So you had these conversations. People said, keep going. What was some of the advice? What were some of the tactical changes that you made to grow out of it and hedge against some of the risks and challenges that you faced in your first iteration of your business?
So let me tell it. Okay, so at the time we were doing flips, and then we came into an accidental new construction project. So we purchased a home that basically imploded.
It didn't implode. It fell down while we were lifting the factory.
Like it literally like almost imploded. Like it.
My story is way more colorful. The house was up and then it was inside of itself. Okay. And that's an implosion. So the house, we had to rebuild it basically. And because Kevin had a background in new construction homes, it wasn't a very hard thing to do. Right. Well, we had renovations and then we also had this new construction house too. Well, what we found and liked was that we knew what the foundation was like because we poured it. We knew what was behind the walls because we erected them. And so with the renovation, it's like you buy it and then you find out all these problems and it chips away at your revenue. Right. Well, with the new construction, we had so much more control. And so it was like, well, why don't we just do this? Like, you can do this. We can just do this and we can predict better what our expenses will be. And so there's that was happening. And then there was an area of town that's near the medical center here in the Houston area. Kevin also did medical construction as well in the largest medical center in the world. Is it the world?
It's
in the world, Craig, the largest medical center in the world. Anyway, because he did construction on the medical center, he knew what was coming in the next couple of years, right? So the path of progress. So there's this dilapidated, blighted land. And Kevin said, this is going to be a very hot spot. It's very close to all of the things that are hot in the city of Houston. And he took me on a ride through it and I couldn't see it. I didn't see it. And then we took banks through. 20 banks said, absolutely not. No one is going to want to live here. So we crowdfunded the funds to build a 16-home community in this community. I'm making sure Kevin likes the story still.
I'm just letting you ride. I don't want to fill in all the gaps.
16-home community. And we used a combination of private investors and hard money and banks to do this development. And did we make a gangbuster amount of money? Nope. But it gave us credibility. And it also was kind of like what put us on the map. Go ahead, Kevin.
All right. So to explain roles, I'm on the operational side. So I do all the back end stuff that she gets to set the plan and say, hey, we can do this. And then I got to figure it out. Right. That's how our skill sets run in our business. So my background is in construction for over 18 years. So this is what I've done since I was 19 years old, and what my degree is in, what my specialty is in. And I've built for some of the largest companies in the world and some mid-sized companies here in Houston. When we started our company, what I really saw was the opportunity in the areas that I grew up in the south side of Houston. Because I built in the medical center for 7 years, I saw the bigger master plan in the path of progress. And that let me know, hey, this is where we want to be. But there was no new construction homes at the time that we were looking for homes for ourselves. And that inspired us to start investing to provide housing for, you know, families that look very much like us, young, upwardly mobile, you know, people who want to be close to the city, close to the action, small families, maybe one kid, no kids. New construction takes longer on the onset, but it's way more efficient on the back end. So the reason why it's a better investment is the comps. The difference between flipping and new construction is if you build a house and I build a house, sticks and bricks cost about the same. Now, what you put in it might change your sellability, but it doesn't necessarily change your cost base. Everybody's cost base is roughly about the same. And the comps are about the same, right? So it just goes into competition on the sales side. So it's way more efficient. And I can build a new house in 4 months compared to a flip that might take me a year if you have unforeseen things, right? So it really just depends on the area and what the safest investment is. And in this particular area, new construction was way safer to do than flips, but it's more cost prohibitive. It's slower to get into. You know, there's a lot of hurdles from a regulatory perspective if you don't know what you're doing. So that's where that team and advisors kind of comes in. We use that to partner with people because we didn't have money and
or credit.
So we partnered with people who brought money and credit to the table. We were able to privately raise with those partners over $700,000 to build. We have 30 homes in this community now, and we've built about 60 homes in the general area in the last 5 years. But literally, that started with 1, 2, 3 houses at a time, and doing what we can to just get the message out and build our company kind of from the bare bones.
Okay, so let me recap a little bit. So first of all, 60 homes over 5 years, that's impressive. I don't care who you are. So congratulations on that. So it sounds to me like you did an accidental new construction because your house imploded / exploded. And I thought that was I thought you were just using it as a phrase or a figure of speech, but you literally meant that it imploded. And so you built a new construction and then you started to realize some of the financial benefits, meaning that the cost to build and your cost basis is all going to put you in a better position come sale time. And I'm sure your first appraisal of your first new construction, you were holding your breath until you got it back and you realized, okay, now I can see how we're kind of setting our own comps. And it seems like from there, you went full bore into this new construction. It seems to me that you had taken banks through a potential new project in a part of town that maybe they weren't comfortable with. And that's why they were telling you no. And so that forced you to then raise the private money. Did you raise that private money from the same investors you built the relationship with when you had the issue from your first iteration of business?
Yes. So we did. We went back to those same investors and the majority of them reinvested. And we also brought in new investors. So it grew our investor pool quite substantially to do more projects. Because at that point, we went from 3 to 4 projects at a time to 20 at a time. And it was scale at that point.
Perfect. So you raised the money. But I think what people really want to know is you flipped houses. Everybody kind of understands what your margins are, can be on a flip, right? So what are your margins like on the new construction compared to the flips? We understand you said it takes a little less time because you can build a house in 4 months. So what money are you putting on the front side? And then what kind of returns are you getting when you finally get those things sold?
So pre-development is what takes that time. The building process is shorter. A flip, you can buy a house tomorrow, start renovations almost immediately. With a new construction, you have about a 4 to 6 month half-life where you're planning, permitting, all those things. When you actually start building, it's more efficient. On the margin side, new construction has a smaller margin for flips, but it's a more stable margin. So our blended margin from all of the product types that we build is about 20% to 25%. But on a flip, you can get 50-60% because you're buying something at a discounted value and forcing that appreciation. The hard part is those margins can slide if you run into appraisal issues or if you have any kind of additional things that you can't foresee in the construction. like when your house falls down. So it makes holding those margins harder to do and way less predictable than new construction. The benefit of new construction is tried and true, right? You're not reinventing the wheel. So there's only so much wood. There's only so much brick. There's only so much siding. And those amounts don't change. And what we did was create a suite of plans so that we could build the same plans on repeat. So we have a production builder model. We're not building a custom home each time. We're building the same plans. And we design maybe 1 to 2 plans a year in addition to what we already have and build those on repeat.
That was, it's like you read my mind. That was going to be my next question. The only detail I need there is talk to us a little bit about like what that means. Bedrooms, bathrooms, square footage type of house.
So got you. So average square footage is about 1700 square feet. It goes anywhere from 1100 square feet to about 2600 square feet on the high end. And 1100 square feet would be more of an affordable. But on average, you'll find them to be about 1800 square feet, 3 bedroom, 2.5 bath. Before land costs got so crazy, we were building more single family, so a little bit wider on a 5,000 square foot lot. These days, land cost is crazy, so we subdivide lots and we build a townhouse style house, which is on a 2,500 square foot lot, 2-story typically, A-frame, high pitch, lots of bells and whistles on the inside to make it sexy.
And what do those run for? How much do you sell them for?
It depends on the product type, anywhere between like mid 3s to high 6s.
And how does that compare to the rest of the metro area?
So the metro area is actually, for the first time in probably a decade, Houston is almost continuous, where every hot area in town has some product in that $300,000 to $500,000 range. So, and everybody's building very similar things, right? So our affordables are the fastest moving. They're in the low 2s, but our market rate stuff is in the mid 3s, and that's on par with everybody else. So the way that we compete is product. We just build a nicer house.
Well, that sounds like a good strategy, just building a nicer house. But I want to ask you about something, because a lot of people who I talk to, economists and builders too, just say it's very difficult, if not impossible, to build affordable housing right now. But you've said a few times that you build and successfully, it sounds like, sell affordable housing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you do that?
Yeah, so it is difficult to build affordable housing if you don't have affordable land. And so one of the things that we have been
successful
at is building relationship with governmental and nonprofit entities to be the builder for them. And so we get the land at either a highly reduced cost, discounted rate, and then we're able to pass those savings on to the buyer.
That's very cool. So the actual building cost is pretty similar, like on a square foot basis, obviously not finishes and stuff, but you know, framing, all that stuff is the same, but you're able to get the land cheaper, and I assume finishes and stuff are a little bit, you choose slightly less expensive stuff there.
Exactly. We design to it. Yeah. And the land offsets that cost so that we can pass on that affordability. And this is all to the higher end of the affordability spectrum. So it's about 120% of the area median income. So for a family of four, our buyers can make up to like $104,000.
No. For a family of four?
Yeah, it's not 104. It's like 104, something like that.
There's a chart.
There is a chart.
And is that actually set by the government or the local area? Like the chart? Okay.
It's set by HUD.
Like it's based on the area in average household income and what the price sells for.
Yes. Yep.
So as a point of clarification, you're getting the land cheaper because you are buying it with these government or nonprofit entities. So are you partnering with them on the front side? Are you buying it? Like, are they buying it and selling? Like, how's the dynamic of that work?
So there's land banks that buy land. That is a government entity that purchases land with tax dollars. So usually tax delinquent properties, vacant land that, you know, nobody has taken ownership of. And so they will buy that with tax dollars and then sell it back to developers to redevelop the land. right? And so because they got it at next to nothing, they're able to pass those savings on to them, and that's done through tax dollars.
And even if they pay more for it, because it incentivizes them, it decreases the tax base. So this is something that started about 20 years ago, a little bit more now, where governmental entities and nonprofits essentially started assembling land in these urban areas to protect housing for future residents, right? So if you go into a lot of the major cities across the country, or even some of the smaller cities across the country, you'll find that cities or land banks own a lot of land, right? And they've been assembling this land for the future growth of the city. And as a developer, our goal is to create a relationship with these entities so that they can give us access to develop on it. In addition to that, what we're trying to do is build products that complement the communities that we're building in and not displace the existing residents, but make it a cohesive, complete community. And that also allows us to interlace our market rate products. So if we have 10 affordable lots and then one lot that maybe we'll overpay for slightly, because we know we already have scale with these 10 lots and we can make higher margins on our market rate stuff. So you can pay a little bit more. It's a horse slide either way.
This is what it's about, right? This is what I call revitalization versus gentrification, because you're figuring out a way to acquire the property at a price point that allows you to service the existing community and not price the existing community out. And that takes work. It takes a lot more effort. And I feel like a lot of developers are so focused on profits, they want to do it as quickly as possible so they don't put in the work to find these great types of deals to service that community, because arguably what they're finding to do is probably more profitable from them. So it takes someone who has the heart, the work ethic, the care, and the understanding to be able to do this. And affordable housing can be solved, but it takes more people like you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that because we are a for-profit business, like, let's start there. But also we care, and we care because a lot of the residents of this community look like us, like they're Black and brown people. They're my grandmother and my aunts and my cousins. They remind me of my family. And so to go into the community and extract the value and move on to the next project for profit, obviously it needs to be profitable or I wouldn't be a business. But I want to make sure that there is profit. But we're also very conscious of the product that we put into the community because we do care.
There's profit, but there's also purpose behind it. Because most people who are looking for profit would have quit when 25 banks told them no.
Yeah.
But your purpose told you to find a way because you had a purpose to build this. And that's what we need.
No, for sure. It's to tell a quick story, that house that fell down, the neighbor next door was a 90-year-old lady who had lived in that neighborhood for 60 years. And she told us the entire history of the community. She was like, you know, such and such down here worked at GE and such down here worked at Texas Instruments. And she was so happy to see somebody rebuilding the community that they worked so hard to build up in the first place, that made it almost worth it. And honestly, that's our most impactful project to date, because to see the smile on her face, to see a house re-erected when it was vacant for 20 years, it was over 220 tires were in that house. It was a tire house. You could see it on our Instagram. But it was blighted in the neighborhood that she worked so hard for. If you look at her house, it's well manicured, well taken care of, because she had a lot of pride in it. So we were able to restore that pride in that neighborhood by building that one house.
Yeah.
This is an incredibly inspiring story, and it's super cool. And thank you for sharing it. I would imagine that there are other investors out there who want to create this type of mutual benefit that you both have created, which is building your own business and building wealth while also helping a community. Do you have any advice for people who want to do this? Because your story is so unique. Is it scalable or transferable to other people?
I think that it is. I think that there's big decisions being made for cities, large and small, in city council meetings, in tax in with council. Your council member has access to things as well, to land and property as well, that they have the ability to make decisions about. And so while there are RFPs, a lot of business is relationship. And if anybody who does business understands that it's about relationship. And so to know what's coming next, to know the path of progress in your city or in the city that you want to invest in, it's important that you are aware and that you're present and you know what's happening in the city. So by the time there's a highway expansion or some new development that's happening in your city, it's already too late. The conversations were had 3 years ago or 5 years ago. And so just making sure that you have your ear to the ground and that you are building relationships. It's not for everybody. Not everybody is going to get these slam dunk deals with cheap land, but everybody wants it. We really put in the work, and we really are very intentional about the work that we do. It's a passion, it's a purpose, but also we wake up and our business is to be at community meetings. It's to meet people. It's to be connected because we know what the ultimate goal is and how we want to change and affect our community for the positive.
And I would say for any investor who is just interested in getting started, in every community, no matter if it's rural, no matter if it's suburban, there's empty land, there's blighted land, and somebody owns that land or somebody has access to it. So providing housing or partnering with them to provide housing is the key and the first step. We have a 7 million home shortage across our country, and the biggest builder in the world builds 82 to 85,000 homes a year. So if you look at the numbers, we're not going to build ourselves out of this gap without help. And since World War II, housing affordability has never been higher, like lower. The ability to actually afford a home, it's very hard for people to do, especially with interest rates. And we need it. So every investor out there, if you drive past an empty lot, that is your opportunity. If you drive past that house that is a little bit too far gone to renovate, that is your opportunity, as well as partnering with these community groups and everything like Aisha's saying, because there are dollars set aside. The text we got just before the phone was like, hey, somebody has $80 million for affordable housing. Those are the types of things that are out there programmatically. They want to see development. And the good thing about new construction is from a risk profile, it's majority on the front end. You partner with a good contractor to actually build the house, but the hard part is actually getting access to the dirt and then planning out the construction. And there's plenty of resources to do that.
Well, Aisha and Kevin, thank you so much for sharing your really unique and inspiring story and sharing your advice to other investors. It's what this show and being a real estate investor is all about, and really appreciate you joining us here today.
We are so grateful to be here. We started our career with Bigger Pockets, so thank you for having us on. And everybody can invest in new construction. You know, the message that we want to have is that new construction is available for everybody. And it's one of the oldest things that has built this country. So we inspire and encourage everybody to go out and try and do it and invest in your local communities, build the housing that we so desperately need.
Amazing. And if you want to learn more about Kevin and Aisha, we'll make sure to link to their social media and all their information in the show notes below. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Bigger Pockets podcast. We'll see you all back here real soon.
The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.